Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 929, The Trumpen Konferbande, Part 8, subtitled The Trumpen Christ. This is being recorded on October 28th of the year 2016. Once again, we are going to continue with our analysis of the political phenomenon of the Trump campaign and various aspects of it. I have spoken before about my artificial construct of the Trumpen Konferbande. The subtitle of this, The Trumpen Christ, and that's spelled K-R-E-I-S, is an adaptation slash corruption of the Himmler Christ. The Himmler Christ, or Himmler's Circle of Friends, was a title applied to a group of German industrialists who financed, and German firms as well, that financed the day-to-day operations of the Nazi SS, headed up, of course, by Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler. In turn, they got the pick of the Nazi slave labor pool to further their economic largesse. And the title, The Trumpen Christ, alludes to the Friends of Donald Trump, a program that looms very large in connection with this, is, for the record, 882, called The Perfect Storm. It is a look at fascism on the rise around the world. And we're going to be taking a look not only at Donald Trump's friends, or as I have termed them, the Trumpen Christ, we are going to be taking a look at how they fit in to various aspects of the rise of fascism around the world. We're going to overlap our discussion significantly with some elements of what we talked about in For the Record 928. We are actually limited to an hour's worth of time for each program. I can't stress strongly enough that listeners should use the article-length written descriptions of the programs that I have laboriously put together. For those people who would like to examine where I get my information, would like to do a little bit of fact-checking, the descriptions are the place to go. We're going to begin once again, not begin once again, that's oxymoronic. We are going to begin with review of a guy named Nigel Farage, F-A-R-A-G-E, I may be mispronouncing that. He is the head of the UK Independence Party, and it was he who was one of the primary leaders of the Brexit movement. That was the referendum that led to the UK withdrawing from the EU. By the way, in the past, I have spoken about the EU and the EMU as the realization of a long-standing goal of German imperialism, which was a German-dominated Europe with a German-dominated economic union at its core. That has been realized. And as we looked at in For the Record 918 and 919, that was the establishment, that is, of a German-dominated United Europe, and also eventually a German-dominated European military to replace NATO, was a focal point of underground Reich maneuvering in the immediate post-World War II period. We took a look at the open letter to Stalin from the Bürger Zeitung from 1949, the Burger Zeitung being a journalistic slash literary outlet for the Steuben Society, which was part of the Nazi underground in this country in the pre-World War II period, and also became part of the underground Reich in the post-World War II period. This is not to say that many, perhaps even most, of the people affiliated with the Steuben Society were simply German Americans and nothing more. But its power structure was Nazi in the pre-World War II period, and certainly underground Reich slash Nazi in the post-World War II period, and appears to have continued to a considerable extent in that vein. Although the EU is, again, a long-standing German goal for imperialism, I think that the withdrawal of the UK from that is going to prove very bad for the UK indeed, economically and politically. Once you have a Germany or a Europe united under German economic control, that will yield automatically to a Europe under German political control, and for the UK to withdraw from that ultimately is going to prove very bad, I think, for it economically. More than a little significant in this regard, and we're going to talk about this, is the fact that Great Britain was adamantly opposed to an integrated EU military policy dominated by Germany. Now, with the UK pulling out of the EU courtesy of Nigel Farage's UK Independence Party and its activism in the Brexit campaign, we may very well be seeing the realization of one of the primary goals stated in 1949 in the open letter to Stalin. And not surprisingly, Nigel Farage is a big backer of Donald Trump. He has other connections as well, and we will look at that in a minute. From the BBC of October 9th of 2016, obscene Donald Trump comments, alpha male boasting. Obscene remarks made about women by U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump were no more than alpha male boasting, Nigel Farage has said. The UK Independence Party interim leader told Fox News the remarks were ugly, unquote, but something, quote, if we are being honest, that men do, unquote. Again, note that Nigel Farage is a big fan of Donald Trump. More about him and more about some of the networking going on within the Trumpen Kreis, within Trump's circle of friends, in a minute. More about Nigel Farage. This from the BBC, or rather this is from The Guardian, an article by John Henley from August 16th of 2016. Alleged sighting of Farage at German embassy sparks citizenship speculation. A reported sighting of Nigel Farage queuing at the German embassy has prompted fevered but probably inaccurate speculation on social media that the Eurosceptic former UKIP leader could be applying for dual citizenship. A spokesman said he could not contact Farage, whose wife, Kirsten Mayer, M-E-H-R, is German, so was unable to confirm whether he had even been at the embassy on Monday when a Facebook user reported seeing him. A couple of points about this Guardian article. Normally, the fact that a British citizen was married to a German woman would not necessarily have any significance at all. However, when we are looking at the world of covert operations and clandestine politics, a wife or lover can often be a kind of case officer and or paymaster. And in the case here of Nigel Farage, I don't think that is an irrelevant question, and I want to stress that is a question I have, not a statement I am making, but is Kristen Mayer, Nigel Farage's German wife, is she just a wife, or is she a kind of case officer and or paymaster? There was a Facebook posting that placed Nigel Farage at the German embassy that was dismissed both by the UK Independence Party and by The Guardian. I certainly would not use an individual Facebook posting as a verifiably credible piece of documentation, but I also, again, would not dismiss the possibility that Nigel Farage perhaps has some deep connections to Germany beyond the nationality of his wife. Now, I ask that question for a variety of reasons. We're going to take a look at how Nigel Farage fits into the Trumpen Kreis here. And I want to note that with the Brexit, a major obstacle to the establishment of an all-EU military under German domination has been removed. Reviewing briefly an excerpt from an article from the German foreignpolicy.com newsletter that feeds along the lower right-hand side of the front page of this website from a German foreignpolicy.com article from June 28th of 2016. The European War Union, this talks about the development of an all-EU military under German control, and I want to note the following. This, again, in the context of Nigel Farage, his German wife, and the possibility that he may have been at the German embassy for whatever purpose, whether establishing dual citizenship or whatever, perhaps to pick up a paycheck and a pat on the back. Note the following, skipping down in this article. With Britain, which had always adamantly opposed an integrated EU military policy having left the EU, Berlin sees an opportunity for reviving its efforts at restructuring the EU's military and mobilizing as many member countries as possible for the EU's future wars. One more time for emphasis. With Britain, which had always adamantly opposed an integrated EU military policy leaving the EU, Berlin sees an opportunity for reviving its efforts at restructuring the EU's military and mobilizing as many member countries as possible for the EU's future wars. The point being here that with Nigel Farage having successfully piloted to an extent the exit of the Brexit, the exit of the UK from the EU, a major obstacle to a long-standing German goal of having an all-EU military structure led and dominated by Germany, was removed. I would also note that the Brexit is very likely to do a great deal of damage economically, socially, and politically to the UK, which, of course, was a major enemy of Germany in both world wars. So again, note that as a result of the efforts of Nigel Farage, a major obstacle to the long-standing German goal of having an all-EU military dominated by Germany has been removed.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Now, once again, referencing For the Record 882. Now, in that program, we took a look at various manifestations of fascism. We took a look at Islamic fascism, the Muslim Brotherhood variety. We have looked at Eurofascism, American fascism, and also Hindu nationalist slash fascism as formulated by the RSS, a Hindu nationalist fascist organization that patterned itself after the Nazis and the Italian fascisti of Benito Mussolini. It was an alumnus of the RSS who assassinated Mahatma Gandhi. Narendra Modi, the president of India, is a devotee of the RSS. His political party, the BJP, that's B as in boy, J as in John, P as in Paul, is a political derivative of the RSS. And as we have seen in the past, Modi appointed members of the RSS to his cabinet. In fact, his cabinet is almost entirely RSS. Now, just as Eurofascists demonize in the present time, they're demonizing immigrants, Muslim immigrants in particular, just as Islamic fascists demonize the infidels, meaning Christians and Jews, the Hindu nationalist slash fascists of Narendra Modi's BJP slash RSS demonize Muslims. It is very, very interesting indeed. In this regard, they have a lot in common, not only with some of their Euro-fascist compatriots, but also with American fascists as well. American fascists, many of them, the quote alt-right group around Donald Trump, are demonizing Muslims and Muslim immigrants in particular, as well as Mexicans, Mexican immigrants, Jews, blacks, and others. One very fascinating bit of information is that many Hindu nationalists are very supportive of Donald Trump. I do not want this to be misunderstood as saying that Indian Americans, not Native Americans, but Americans of Indian national origin, are supportive of Trump. Roughly 7% of Indian Americans say they will vote for Trump, but Hindu nationalists are very supportive, many of them anyway, are very supportive of Donald Trump. Bear in mind, as we have looked at in past broadcasts, that the head of the Trump campaign is Stephen K. Bannon, whose Breitbart website slash blog did much to mainstream alt-right fascist and bigoted politics. We're going to take a look at Stephen K. Bannon, Nigel Farage, and Narendra Modi, and some elements of commonality between those elements here from a New York Times article of October 14th of 2016. This is by Jeremy Peters, P-E-T-E-R-S. Among Donald Trump's biggest fans, Hindu nationalists. And this article reads in part, skipping down. Mr. Trump may be largely indifferent to the reasons behind his Hindu loyalists' fervor, but his most senior advisors are not. The campaign's chief executive, Stephen K. Bannon, is a student of nationalist movements. Mr. Bannon is close to Nigel Farage, a central figure in Britain's movement to leave the European Union, and Bannon is an admirer of India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, a Hindu nationalist Mr. Bannon has called the Reagan of India, unquote. It may be pure coincidence that some of Mr. Trump's words channel the nationalistic and, some argue, anti-Muslim sentiments that Mr. Modi stoked as he rose to power. But it is certainly not coincidental that many of Mr. Trump's biggest Hindu supporters are also some of Mr. Modi's most ardent backers, unquote. Note again that there is an area of overlap between Modi's Hindu nationalist slash fascists of the BJP, RSS stripe, and Donald Trump's quote, alt-right, unquote, supporters, Stephen K. Bannon being one of the points of unification. Recall also that Narendra Modi's rise to power was financed in part by Pierre Omidyar. Pierre Omidyar of eBay also helped to finance the Maidan coup that brought the OUNB heirs to power in Ukraine. And he also, that is to say, Pierre Omidyar, founded First Look Media and The Intercept, which were the recipients, one of the vessels for receiving the files of Edward Snowden, the Obverse Oswald, the Peach Fuzz Fascist, or Eddie the Friendly Spook, as I have called him. And also note that Nazi fellow traveler Glenn Greenwald, as we looked at in For the Record 888, among other programs, is, he not only was Eddie Snowden's leaking journalist of choice, but he has found his primary journalistic outlet with Pierre Omidyar's First Look Media and The Intercept. And For the Record 885, I took a look at what I call the Conga Line Ops. The discussion itself is way too lengthy and detailed to go into here, but suffice it to say that WikiLeaks and Eddie the Friendly Spook Snowden are joined at the hip. They're part of the same operation. The death knell for the Obama-Clinton reboot with Russia was affected by Snowden's decamping to Moscow, courtesy of WikiLeaks. That helped to set the stage for the Ukraine coup, financed in part by Pierre Omidyar, who also financed Narendra Modi's rise to power in part as well. In the person of Stephen K. Bannon of Breitbart, the alt-right maven, we have an element of unification between Nigel Farage of the UK Independence Party and Narendra Modi and Donald Trump. And again, I don't think that these friends of Trump, these members of the Trumpenkreis, Trump's circle of friends, are in this as a matter of coincidence or happenstance at all. I think we are looking at a preconceived and rigorous and, frankly, very brilliantly executed political gambit.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Reviewing some information that we looked at in our last program as well, Trump has also received some vigorous support from Russian fascist Vladimir Zhirinovsky, that's in Z-H-I-R-I-N-O-V-S, as in Sam, K as in kangaroo, Y as in yellow. Now, in the media, they have portrayed Zhirinovsky as an ally of Vladimir Putin. Actually, Vladimir Zhirinovsky's political party is an opposition political party in the Duma. He is what they like to euphemize, Vladimir Zhirinovsky is what the contemporary media, who absolutely will not use the F-word, fascist, that is what they euphemize as an ultra-nationalist. In fact, he is a Russian fascist, and he has been, his political ascent has been bankrolled by a German Nazi named Gerhard Fry. Briefly reviewing the verbal support given to Donald Trump by Vladimir Zhirinovsky from Reuters of October 12th of 2016, an article by Andrew Osborne, O-S-B-O-R-N, Putin ally tells Americans, vote for Trump or face nuclear war. Americans should vote for Donald Trump as president next month or be risk being dragged into a nuclear war, according to a Russian ultra-nationalist ally of President Vladimir Putin, who likes to compare himself to the U.S. Republican candidate. Note some of the similarities here, skipping down. Zhirinovsky once proposed blocking off mostly Muslim southern Russia with a barbed wire fence, echoing Trump's call for a wall along the U.S. border with Mexico. Zhirinovsky, who said he met Trump in New York in 2002, revels in his similarities with the American businessman. And please note that we're going to review a segment from For the Record 94, recorded on May 5th of 1998. Now, in this, we're going to talk about Vladimir Zhirinovsky and his financing courtesy of German Nazi Gerhard Fry, last name F as in Frank, R as in Roger, E as in Eric, Y as in yellow. Gerhard Fry, head of the Deutsche National Zeitung and Soldaten Zeitung, actually the editor of it, is also the head, was the head of the DVU, the Deutsche Volksunion, as a German Nazi party. And he is an individual we have looked at in the past, and he has touched on many a political base. He received support from the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, and through that, the CIA. He also was the person who first published the disinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald fired at right-wing American General Edwin Walker. This was meant to indicate that Oswald was not a politically motivated assassin, since he tried to assassinate an ultra-right-winger like Edwin Walker, as well as JFK. That information was first disclosed to the light of day, as we have been told, by the FBI, who heard it from Marina Oswald in an interview in early December of 1963. That, however, overlooks the fact that Gerhard Fry published that same information, which came from Major General Edwin Walker, and Fry published that in the Deutsche National Zeitung and Soldaten Zeitung on November 29th of 1963. Also note in the passage we are about to hear, and again, we're going back 18 years in time, more than that, actually, a little over 18 years. Notice the similarity in the political rhetoric between Vladimir Zhirinovsky, financed in part by Gerhard Fry, and people like Donald Trump, some of the Euro-fascist political parties with their anti-Muslim orientation. And again, bear in mind what I spoke about in For the Record 882, that one of the commonalities in various kinds of contemporary fascist political movements is the demonization of the other. For Muslim fascists of the Muslim Brotherhood, it is the infidels, the Jews, and the Christians. For the Eurofascists, it is Muslims and immigrants, also to an extent the Jews. For American fascists, it is Muslims, it is Jews, it is blacks, it is Mexicans, and illegal immigrants in particular. For the Hindu nationalist slash fascists, it is the Muslims. The one commonality, again, being, You see how they are? You can't trust them. They are against you. We are your only hope. Side with us. Them and they and we, varying with the various manifestations of contemporary fascism. So once again, let's go back to May 5th, 1998, and listen to Gerhard Fry and his financing of Russian fascist and Trump political ally Vladimir Zhirinovsky, one of the Russian members of the Trumpenkreis, Trump's circle of friends.
This is from the Germany Alert newsletter of April 27th of 1998. It's datelined Magdeburg, M-A-G-D-E-B-U-R-G, and headlined Pro-Nazi DVU wins 13% in Saxony-Anhalt election. The DVU is the Deutsche Volksunion. This, by the way, is essentially a Nazi party in Germany. More about the DVU in a minute. Raging forces of anti-foreigner, anti-Semitic, anti-gay hate have inflicted a hideous victory upon Saxony-Anhalt, polling some 13% of the vote for the pro-Nazi German People's Union, or DVU, in state elections. DVU boss Gerhard Frey, F-R-E-Y, a multimillionaire publisher who has been a leader of pro-Nazi forces in Germany for decades, will see 14 of his party's members in the state parliament. DVU candidates campaigned with slogans like, "Foreigner bandits get out," and "German money for German jobs" in the eastern state, where even official statistics now show a record 22.6% of the workforce have no jobs. By the way, I want listeners to note very carefully the rhetoric being used by fascists in Europe, including some of the Nazis in Germany, because I want to stress very carefully and emphatically the continuity both rhetorically and ideologically between the fascist powers currently, the fascist parties currently coming to the fore in Europe, and the supposedly respectable Republican Party of the United States, which is itself a fascist party, at this point somewhat to the right of Mussolini. Please note the ideological and rhetorical continuity between these, quote, extremist, unquote, fascist and Nazi parties in Europe and the, quote, respectable, unquote, Republican Party in the United States. Continuing. Of the unemployment in Saxony-Anhalt, unofficial estimates put real employment close to 50% and much higher still for young voters. Pro-Nazis ran a well-financed campaign that included pamphlets for every household, wall posters throughout the state, and even leaflets dropped from aircraft. Exit polls showed that up to 30% of voters under 30 years old voted for the pro-Nazis. And again, I think that is a very, very important electoral result. It has been predictably, its significance has been predictably minimized by media critics, in particular in this country, pointing out that this is only one particular part of Germany, and the former East Germany is bedeviled by very, very high unemployment. All of Europe, including Germany and France, are experiencing very high unemployment. And around the world, including in the United States, the economic distress being caused by corporations downsizing and or moving major manufacturing facilities to countries where they can take advantage of cheaper labor costs is not only causing economic distress, but it's causing political dissatisfaction, and that is promoting the rise of fascism around the world, including and especially here in the United States. Some of the connections between German and American fascism were underscored in a book called The Man Who Knew Too Much. This is arguably the, certainly the most comprehensive, arguably the best single volume about the assassination of President Kennedy. The book The Man Who Knew Too Much was authored by Dick Russell, published in hardcover and softcover by Carroll and Graf Publishers, copyright 1992. The ISBN number is 0-88184-900-6. And in The Man Who Knew Too Much, there is a discussion of the fact that the misinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald supposedly fired at former Major General Edwin Walker, an extreme right-winger in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, that misinformation, which was floated by the Warren Commission in order to give the impression that Lee Harvey Oswald was not a politically motivated assassin when he allegedly slew the liberal President Kennedy, because he had also allegedly tried to kill the ultra-right right-wing General Walker. Well, in fact, there are serious problems with the notion of Oswald's having fired at Walker, and I think the following passage from The Man Who Knew Too Much will make clear just what those problems are. The first mention, Dick Russell writes in The Man Who Knew Too Much, the first mention of Oswald's attempt on Walker had appeared in the Deutsche Nationalzeitung and Soldatenzeitung, a right-wing newspaper out of Munich, West Germany, on November 29th, 1963. Yet Marina Oswald would not tell her story to the FBI until 4 days later, purportedly the first awareness anybody had of it. Assassination researcher Peter Dale Scott's look into the newspaper's history revealed that it had several ex-Nazis and ex-SS men on its staff, and a long arm into American far-right circles. Its editor, Gerhard Frey, capital F-R-E-Y, was closely tied in Munich to the Ukrainian ABN, as well as to two men whose names show up among General Willoughby's correspondents, Dr. Theodor Oberlander and Walter Becker. General Willoughby, nee Wiedenbach, was a German-born fascist who was General MacArthur's chief of intelligence from 1939 to 1950. He also was a major figure in the American far-right and international fascist circles. Theodor Oberlander, a former SS officer, was a German cabinet minister for ex-ballet until his role in liquidating Jewish populations in the former Soviet Union came to light. And Dr. Walter Becker, the infamous Dr. B, was a Sudeten German fascist who had much to do with the arranging the Nazi takeover of the Sudetenland in what used to be Czechoslovakia. Please note, however, that supposedly Marina Oswald disclosed the Walker-Oswald connection to the light of day on December 3rd of 1963, yet Gerhard Frey had that information published 4 days before that. He got his information from General Walker. I would note that Gerhard Frey and the Nazi elements that of which he was a part are very profoundly connected to their American fascist counterparts, which is not to say that Americans or Germans are necessarily fascist, but fascism is obviously not alien to either country, and I want to emphasize that the German fascist elements have very strong connections to their American counterparts, and in fact not only the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, the Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit that was incorporated into U.S. intelligence at the end of the war, but also the Ethnic Outreach Council of the Republican Party, literally a Nazi wing of the U.S. Republican Party, very closely connected to the Gehlen organization and the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, basically a reworking of Adolf Hitler's committee of, I've forgotten what he called it, it was an organization put together by Adolf, the Committee of Subjugated Nations. Was what Adolf Hitler called the organization, his consortium of Central and Eastern European fascists, that was renamed the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations at the end of World War II. That was later incorporated into the former World Anti-Communist League, and those types of elements, the Central and Eastern European fascists, such as the Hungarian Arrow Cross, the Romanian Iron Guard, and various Gehlen elements, constitute what is literally a Nazi wing of the U.S. Republican Party today, which is viewed as being able to deliver the key vote in five swing states. There's a miscellaneous archive show called Nazis and Anti-Semites on George Bush's campaign that talks about that. Also, a two-hour interview with John Loftus, along with Mark Ahrens, the co-author of The Secret War Against the Jews. Both of those tapes are available from Spitfire for those who would like to peruse the documentation. In addition, Gerhard Frey himself was very close to the aforementioned former Nazi Major General Reinhard Gehlen. Again, Gehlen was in charge of all Third Reich intelligence for the Eastern Front in World War II. He then jumped to first U.S. intelligence, then NATO, and finally the Federal Republic of Germany, with his organization basically intact, the derivative and residua of Adolf Hitler's Eastern Front intelligence organization, the Gehlen organization very closely connected to the Odessa, the post-World War II SS underground. The connections between Gehlen, the Odessa, and in turn between Galen's organization and Gerhard Frey are discussed in a vitally important recent book entitled The Beast Reawakens. That book was authored in hardcover by Martin A. Lee, copyright 1997, published by Little Brown Incorporated. There are, by the way, four different one-hour interviews that I've recorded with Martin Lee. Those are available from Spitfire. The ISBN number for The Beast Reawakens is 0-316-51959-6. And in The Beast Reawakens, there's a discussion of the connections between Gerhard Frey and Reinhard Gehlen. Gehlen's organization finally wound up as the BND, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, the German intelligence service. The connection here is between Russian fascist Vladimir Zhirinovsky and Gerhard Frey. Frey was one of the major funding sources for Zhirinovsky's rise in the former Soviet Union. Later on in this program, time permitting, we will be talking about fascism and its rise in some of the former Soviet republics as well. Of the Zhirinovsky-Frey and Frey-Gehlen connections, Martin A. Lee writes as follows. Although Zhirinovsky later spoke of destroying Germany with nuclear weapons if it got out of line, His close association with the DVU, that's the party that just won 13% in Saxony-Anhalt, was beneficial to both parties. The Russian got much-needed cash, while Fry, a marginal figure in German politics, gained extensive media attention by rubbing shoulders with Zhirinovsky. This enhanced Fry's reputation among German neo-Nazi groups, which had quarreled with the DVU during the Cold War because of its support for NATO and the NATO alliance. Even before he formed the DVU in 1971, with the professed objective to, quote, save Germany from communism, unquote, Fry received behind-the-scenes support from General Reinhard Gehlen, Bonn's powerful spy chief. But after the superpower face-off ended, the DVU Führer quickly shifted gears and demanded that Germany leave NATO. His newspapers began to run inflammatory articles that denounced the United States and praised Russia as a more suitable partner for post-Cold War Germany. Fry also joined the chorus of neo-Nazi agitators who expressed solidarity with Saddam Hussein and condemned the U.S.-led war against Iraq in 1991.
That again from For the Record program number 94, a look at global fascism from May 5th of 1998.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Now, looking once again at one of the dynamics that I pointed out in For the Record 918 and 919, I pointed out that my opinion, the candidacy of Donald Trump at an international level is, among other things, the equivalent of the Bürger Zeitung's open letter to Stalin from 1949, that penned by some German Nazis. The Bürger Zeitung is one of the journalistic outlets for the Steuben Society. That was a German-American society which eventually became part of the Nazi underground in the pre-World War II period. We looked at that in For the Record program 918. And it then became part of the underground Reich Fifth Column in the post-World War II period, championing, among other things, the exoneration and rehabilitation of Nazi war criminals. One of the top advisors to Donald Trump on foreign policy is Joseph P. Schmitz, the ultra-right-wing Schmitz family in this country. Schmitz was described by a Pentagon official as, quote, obsessed with all things German and all things Steuben, unquote. Donald Trump himself is no stranger to the Steuben Society. From Donald Trump's Wikipedia entry, Trump has said that he is part of his German heritage. He served as Grand Marshal of the 1999 German-American Steuben Parade in New York City. More about Trump's association with the Steuben Society. This is from WQAD.com from August 5th of 2016. New York restaurant takes down Trump photo amid Yelp complaints. This by Sarah Tissinger, T-I-S-I-N-G-E-R. I don't know how that is pronounced. The response by the restaurant owners to complaints about a photo of Trump. Speaking of Trump, he is also very involved with the Steuben Association and wished us luck when we opened the restaurant 8 years ago with that picture. Does not mean we support his views. The point being that Donald Trump himself is no stranger to the Steuben Society. And For the Record 921, the Trumpen Konferbande Part part four, Trump on the Stump. We took a look at how Donald Trump not only was aping the political or the rhetorical style of Adolf Hitler, but he kept a book of Adolf Hitler's speeches in a drawer by his bed, according to his ex-wife Ivana, and read them. And a number of observers had noted the similarity between much of Trump's rhetoric and that of Adolf Hitler, a man whose rhetorical style was studied by Donald Trump. That may very well be the genesis of the dynamic I'm about to relate. From the Inquisitor site, INQUISITR, of September 9th of 2016, an article by Norman Byrd, B-Y-R-D. Did Donald Trump paraphrase Hitler's slogan, Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, at the Values Voter Summit? Donald Trump has often been accused of sounding like and or patterning his speeches after Adolf Hitler, and after delivering his Values Voters Summit speech Friday in Washington, D.C., he'll likely be accused of paraphrasing Hitler once again. Because inasmuch as many political speeches speak to nationalism and patriotism, and neither Trump nor Hitler are exceptions to the rule, and far from it, 2016 Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump seems to have taken a line straight from the Nazi Party's slogan, Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer, one people, one empire, one leader, unquote. Right Side Broadcasting streamed the Values Voters Summit in Washington, D.C., live on YouTube Friday, September 9th, presenting several speakers such as Republican National Committee Chairman Rince, R-E-I-N-C-E, Priebus, P-R-I-E-B-U-S, as in Sam, and former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani at the annual conference. The main speaker, of course, was Republican Party nominee for President Donald Trump. He regaled the crowd of Christian voters in his usual bombastic way, but near the end of the speech, Trump seemed to play into the hands of his accusers, who claimed that not only does Trump remind people of infamous dictators like Italian fascist Benito Mussolini and German Nazi leader Adolf Hitler with his jingoism, blatant nativist nationalism, and over-the-top, fact-twisting scapegoating, but he sounds like them as well. He paraphrased the infamous Nazi Party slogan, Ein Volk, Ein Reich, Ein Führer. After quoting from the Book of John from the Christian Bible, Trump spoke to people standing together in the United States, quote, imagine what our country could accomplish if we started working together as one people, under one God, saluting one flag. If one saw the speech or watches it in replay, Trump begins raising his voice on the first use of the word one, emphasizing each part of the verbal triptych, T-R-I-P-T-Y-C-H. Not only does he invoke the traditional lines from the Pledge of Allegiance, he progresses from, just as the Nazi Party slogan does, one people I invoke, to under one God, an implied unified Christian nation, or Ein Reich, unquote, to one flag, unquote, Ein Führer, the symbol of a unified nation. And again, one might dismiss that as coincidental in the absence of other information, but there is a great deal of other information. And in light of the fact that Trump has studied Hitler's speeches, and in light of all of the other Nazi slash alt-right connections and manifestations of Donald Trump, I don't think we can dismiss that as mere coincidence. From The Guardian of October 24th of 2016, we have an article by Ben Jacobs, J-A-C-O-B-S, Fees and Crooks. Trump persists with attacks on media and polls. Subtitled, Republican nominee appears in Florida to deride U.S. media and falsely claim hacked emails of Hillary Clinton campaign chair show poll rigging. Donald Trump escalated his rhetoric against the media and against pollsters on Monday, alleging that both were part of a rigged system, unquote, trying to undermine his candidacy. Speaking in a rally in St. Augustine, Florida, Trump falsely claimed that hacked emails of John Podesta showed that the Clinton campaign chair was, quote, rigging the polls by oversampling Democrats, unquote. The Republican nominee, whose campaign is managed by the pollster Kellyanne Conway, called this a, quote, voter suppression technique, unquote. Oversampling is a method used by pollsters to get better measurements of specific subgroups and is entirely normal in polling. The statement followed a tweet from the Republican on Monday morning in which he claimed, quote, major story that the Dems are making up phony polls in order to suppress the Trump voting. We are going to win, unquote. Almost every independent poll has consistently shown a steady lead for Clinton since late July, and Conway has repeatedly conceded in recent days that Trump is behind. Trump also escalated his attacks on media. He said the press, which he described as being composed of thieves and crooks, may be even more corrupt than the rival whom he repeatedly derided as crooked Hillary, unquote. A couple things in that regard. Paramilitary right-wingers are already gearing up for what they call a revolution, unquote. In the event that Trump does not win the election, they are viewing this as a rigged election, unquote, something Trump and his supporters have been very vocal in emphasizing. As I speak on October 28th of 2016, Eamon Bundy and his gun-toting compatriots who crossed state lines armed in order to occupy federal land were acquitted, and the jury, amazingly enough, said that their protest was just a peaceful Martin Luther King-style sit-in. Martin Luther King didn't carry guns, didn't threaten people, didn't access computers and harass the family members of employees of the refuge, as Bundy and company were reported to have done. It is a grotesque act of, well, not justice, but injustice. But do note that, and now not only the sovereign citizens of the Cleveland Bundy variety, but also the Oath Keepers are talking about monitoring polls in order to guard against voter fraud. This is a weaponized version of an old Republican gambit. Note also that the Trump campaign and the alt-right slash fascist Nazi foundation that has buttressed it is now using an old Nazi term for reporters. It's called Lügenpresse, or lying press. I would not actually quibble with the basic veracity of the term. It's not that the media are lying about Trump. They've actually given Trump a free pass. If that sounds far-fetched, read the book The Making of Donald Trump by David K. Johnston. Donald Trump basically has never done anything right or honest in his whole damn life. He is so crooked. The late Hunter S. Thompson might have said of Donald Trump, he's so crooked he has to screw his pants on in the morning. And yet the media have focused on Donald Trump's foul behavior toward women, something I don't excuse. But his basic gambit is, well, I'm a great businessman, therefore I'm qualified to run the country. In fact, he is a dishonest and incompetent businessman who has screwed more people than could be named. He has been the focal point of 3,500 civil lawsuits. He has had multiple bankruptcy proceedings on his various business enterprises. And again, the man is simply incompetent from a business standpoint and a crook as well. The BuzzFeed block of October, when you talk about the media, they've basically given Trump a free pass. The BuzzFeed block of October 24th of 2016, an article by Rosie Gray, G-R-A-Y, the alt-right has adopted an old Nazi term for reporters, unquote. A sly reference, says a white nationalist leader, skipping down. Tell the truth, and CNN sucks had become staples at nearly every Trump rally. On Saturday night, a new and foreign accusation came to the fore. Lügenpresse, unquote. The term, which means lying press in German, has a history dating back to the mid-1800s and was used by the Nazis to discredit the media. In recent years, it has been revived by German far-right anti-immigrant groups. And on Saturday, it made an appearance at a Trump rally in Cleveland, Ohio. Skipping down. Richard Spencer, the white nationalist leader who is considered one of the leaders of the alt-right, was able to shed some light on this for me. I see lying press, unquote, and Lügenpresse, unquote, all over the place, Spencer said in an email. It's typical alt-right, serious, ironic, and with a sly reference to boot, unquote. Spencer said the term had been in use in American alt-right circles for a year at least, skipping down. Breitbart News, by the way, was formerly headed by Stephen K. Bannon, now the head of the Trump campaign. The deputy campaign manager for Donald Trump, David Bossi, is the head of the Citizens United organization. Breitbart News reported favorably on the term in an interview earlier this year with the leader of the German far-right group Pegida, writing, "It will come as no surprise to many that the mainstream media will lash out against a word that highlights their own intentional failings. But Lutz Bachmann's Pegida has popularized the term to the point where it has become a pillar, even a rallying cry for the nationalist populist movements across the continent." Again, note the ideological and rhetorical slash journalistic alliance between Breitbart, headed by Stephen Bannon, and the Pegida group. Stephen Bannon also has an affiliation with Nigel Farage and Narendra Modi as well. Skipping down. Meanwhile, the hatred toward the press among the larger population of Trump supporters grows increasingly pronounced nearly every day. In these final weeks of the campaign, at nearly every rally, Trump riles up his audience against the press as reporters sit in the media pen, easy targets for vitriol. Reporters disembarking the press bus at Trump's rally in Naples, Florida on Sunday, the day after the Lügenpresse incident, were immediately greeted by boos and shouts of tell the truth. And closing, more about the friends of Donald Trump from the Raw Story blog of October 21st of 2016. A guy named David French, who writes for the National Review. It's a right-wing publication founded by William F. Buckley, who not only had a background in the CIA, but who was a Knight of Malta as well. That has not kept David French from the rhetorical brickbats, of the alt-right. This is by Brad Reed, "How Neo-Nazi Trolls Tormented an Anti-Trump Conservative for Adopting a Black Daughter." If you've never interacted with Donald Trump's hardcore alt-right followers online, consider yourself lucky. For the past year and a half, the alt-right has used social media to viciously torment Donald Trump's critics on both the right and the left. National Review writer David French who briefly flirted with launching his own independent presidential candidacy to challenge Trump, writes on Friday about the awful harassment he and his family have been subjected to over the past year. In particular, the alt-right made a point to attack French's youngest daughter, whom his family had adopted from Ethiopia. You see, alt-righters view bringing in children of color to America as the ultimate betrayal of the white race, which is why they had particular scorn for French. I saw images of my daughter's face in gas chambers with a smiling Trump in a Nazi uniform preparing to press a button and kill her, he writes. I saw her face photoshopped into images of slaves. She was called a niglet and a dindu. The alt-right unleashed on my wife Nancy, claiming that she had slept with black men while I was deployed to Iraq, and that I loved to watch while she had sex with black bucks, unquote. People sent her pornographic images of black men having sex with white women, with someone photoshopped to look like me, watching. By the way, David French is an Iraq war veteran. We have not got time to go into this at any length, but there is someone, as reported in the Talking Points memo of October 26th of 2016, Blacks for Trump supporter, a former member of a violent cult. This is by Allegra Kirkland. This is Michael the Black Man, who is a former member of the Yahweh Ben Yahweh cult, an extremist cult that touts anti-Semitism and views Hillary Rodham Clinton as actually a closet member of the Rothschilds. That will be in the description for the Record 929. This concludes For the Record 929, The Trump and Confabanda, Part 8, The Trump and Christ. This is being recorded on October 28th of the year 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.